intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, The Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Tell you a little bit about Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio brings you a platform unlike anything on the internet today. A place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
It's great. In your mind, does the world seem inverted, backward, dissonant?
Dare to think out loud.
You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded.
Dare to think out loud.
You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren.
Dare to think out loud.
You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history.
Dare to think out loud.
You have tuned in to the right show.
Dare to think out loud.
Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Wow, what a concept. Thinking as opposed to feeling. Welcome, everyone, to Dare to Think Out Loud. I'm Mike Gaddy, the Rebel Madman, and I have with me today, as usual, my good friend from Arizona, Cal Robbins, and our producer from down south of the equator. For only a short time, I think he's heading back north of the equator before too long, and that would be Dave Scorpio. Dave, how about saying hello to the folks and tell them how they can help us promote Revolution Radio, please, sir?
Oh, absolutely, Mike. Good to be on with you, and Cal, this is going to be a good one. Hey, everyone out there listening, you know, it's everyone already knows that freedom of speech is under attack more so than ever. They want to feed the public a steady diet of lies, half-truths, and misinformation. But Revolution Radio is a place where you're going to get true original source research with people like Mike Gaddy, who is uncovering the mysteries of history that most people don't know about. And Mike has the documents to back up what he says. There's also nearly 100 other hosts here on the station. So you're going to hear a lot of great stuff on here. And, you know, it takes money to keep something like this going. And remember, everybody on Revolution Radio is working for free. That includes the hosts and the management. No one's making money. This is all an act of love and an act of trying to inform the public. So come aboard. Come on freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Become a Patreon member and give what you can, you know, try to make a monthly donation and keep this ship afloat. Or you can scroll down to the bottom of the front page and there's a actual physical donation where you can mail in donations the old fashioned way. So come on board and help us out, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. And Cal, how you doing out there in Western Arizona?
are doing good out here in Arizona. It's warming up, still dry. You know, of course, it's a desert. The garden's actually starting to produce some vegetables. We're starting to get radishes, peas, and strawberries already.
Well, that's fantastic. And you indicated prior to the show while we were talking that you're willing to share a few of those. So, you know, right after the show, I'll be right over.
Come on over. You're always welcome.
Well, thanks. Guys, Cal and I have been amazed as we have delved into the study of the founding era of this country. And one of the things that we have talked about so many times are the people we've never heard of, that we weren't taught about in school, that we certainly won't hear on the evening news, and there are very few history books written about them. As a matter of fact, in America's academia, for over 100 years, anti-federalists weren't mentioned by anybody. And I don't really like the phrase anti-federalist, because that was the name the Federalists gave them to make them look bad, you know, kind of like deplorables and other stuff. So, and it worked. But Elbridge Gerry, I think, had probably the best definition. He said, the Federalists really aren't Federalist. They're nationalist. And he said, but instead of using the phrase Federalist and Anti-Federalist, I would rather use the words rats and anti-rats. So today we are going to talk about one of the premier anti-rats in these people that you very seldom have ever heard of. And we're going to be talking about Samuel Bryan, who wrote as Sentinel. Now, Samuel Bryan's father, George Bryan, was a judge in Pennsylvania at this time, and he was also a staunch anti-federalist. When our good friend Samuel Bryan started writing opposing the Constitution, people thought it was his dad. So for, you know, his first series, many people thought it was George Bryan writing instead of Samuel, but history shows us that it was, in fact, Samuel. And so he wrote three series of essays. He wrote 1 through 18, which was opposing the Constitution for various reasons. He wrote 19 through 24 to try to help anti-federalists get elected to the Congress after the Constitution was ratified. He wanted to put as many people to oppose the Constitution as he could into political office. And then after that, he wrote 69 essays in favor of a Bill of Rights or amendments. Now, remarkably, you can't find those 69. Or if you can, I sure would like for you to share them, because I can't find them. But I will tell you this, you can go to Amazon.com and you can get essays 1 through 24 for the paltry sum of $930. So, you know, about almost 200 pages, $930. That's not bad, guys, you know. yeah, right. Do you get the idea? Of course, you can buy the Federalist papers for, you know, 8, 10, 12, 14 bucks. But 24 essays of Samuel Bryan will cost you 930. Should be a lesson in there somewhere. I really think that there is. Now, Samuel Bryan totally opposed the Constitution. But as we have delved into these, and Cal and I have talked about many of these aspects of Bryan, and before the program started, we said ourselves that you could do a 2-hour dissertation on Sentinel number 1. So many things in his writings are so profound, and the really remarkable thing is how much they relate to the political situation in this country right now. Not 200 years ago, right now. But his description of the Constitution, which I'm going to read for you, is probably the best description I have ever heard anyone make about this particular, not only the Constitution, but what led to the Constitution. And here I will be quoting Samuel Bryan. Quote, "The evil genius of darkness presided at its birth. It came forth under the veil of mystery, its true features being carefully concealed. And every deceptive art has been and is practicing to have this spurious brat received as the genuine offspring of heaven-born liberty. So fearful are its patrons that you should discern the imposition, that they have hurried on its adoption with the greatest precipitation. After so recent a triumph over British despots, after such torrents of blood and treasure have been spent, after involving ourselves in the distresses of an arduous war, and incurring such a debt for the express purpose of asserting the rights of humanity, it is truly astonishing that a set of men among ourselves should have the effrontery to attempt the destruction of our liberties. But in this enlightened age, to hope to dupe the people by the arts they are practicing is still more extraordinary." Unquote. Now, that to me is just absolutely remarkable. And everything he said in there can be documented. That it was brought forth in the dark. The people weren't sent to the Constitutional Convention to come up with a new constitution. And it came forth under the veil of mystery. No one was allowed to hear what was taking place at this convention. No one at the convention was allowed to send out to anyone what was happening while they were there, which really bothered Luther Martin. And he made the statement as, why should I believe that the entire genius of this country is only contained in this room? Why can I not consult the people in Maryland who sent me here? Maybe that's why Luther Martin has a grave somewhere where nobody knows where it is, with no headstone, and it's been paved over. Why tyrants have marble mansions on the banks of the Potomac River. Should tell us something, I would think. But anyway, that's what we are dealing with Samuel Bryan. So, Cal, do you have any comments at this point before we delve into number one?
Well, the only point I'd like to make is that when it comes to the anti-federalists, the serious lack of information speaks volumes. At least it does to me. Like you said, there's 69 articles written by Sentinel or Samuel Bryan, and you can't find them. I can't find them. And if anybody out there has them, please share. Yeah, it's the truth has been hidden is basically what's happened.
Oh, I could not agree more. Dave, do you have any thoughts at this point?
Oh, well, yeah, that's a great point. Just how difficult it is to find much of anything on so-called anti-federalists. And Mike, I thought you started off the show with a good point that anti-federalist gives it a negative connotation immediately. These people were pro-freedom. They're fighting for freedom. So they're pro-freedom, I guess, is maybe a better way to put it, because anti-federalist just gives it a negative connotation, of course, on purpose.
Well, absolutely true. And then I just wanted to kind of jump to this point, because I believe this point here speaks volumes about the situation that we face today. Now, this is taken from another one of Sentinel's essays. And I will read it for you, and I will try to do that as slowly as possible to let these words of wisdom actually sink in. Quote, "Blinded by prejudice industriously fomented, influenced by sordid motives of private interest, or intimidated by apprehensions of being ruined in their professions. A great majority of the citizens of Philadelphia have suffered themselves to be made the scaffold upon which the well-born junto have ascended to the government of this state, and thereby to a predominancy in that of the United States. For several years past, the essential privilege of free men, that of electing their legislators, has been reduced to unsubstantiated forms, to a mere farce, the appointment being really made by the junto previous to the legal election. Think that might have happened just a few months ago? The situation of this city has been similar to that of Rome under the emperors, who artfully gratified the people with the forms of that liberty which they had enjoyed under the Republic, continuing their ostensible representatives and offices and officers, although in fact they were the creatures of the emperors and entirely subservient to them. Thus you have been amused with the show of annual elections and the name of representatives without any touch of reality. What do you think about that, Cal?
He pretty much just knocks it out of the park. He explains exactly what's going on.
Well, I found it just absolutely, where he talks especially about, about the part to where a junto, and this junto now we would call the deep state. So if we translate that into the deep state, and he says that of electing legislators has been reduced to unsubstantial form, to a mere force, the appointment being really made by the deep state previous to the actual election. You think we might have just had that, guys? Did we just experience that exact same thing that he said that the Federalists were doing in 1788 and 1789?
It just became apparent, but that's been going on since 1788 when they first had elections.
That would be true.
it just became obvious is all, at least obvious. Obvious so that at least Stevie Wonder could see. I mean, some people still don't see it.
Well, let me continue this and just replace the rulers, the people who are running things, with the deep state. The situation at this city has been similar to that of Rome under the deep state, who artfully gratified the people with the forms of that liberty which they had enjoyed under the Republic, continuing their ostensible representatives and officers, although in fact they were the creatures of the deep state and entirely subservient to the deep state. Thus you have been amused with the show of annual elections and the name of representatives without any basis in reality. Wow. That to me is just that he really nailed today. But let me start off and kind of look into Sentinel number one here a little bit. And so people will get an idea as to how Sentinel got started. And he sent a letter to the Independent Gazetteer newspaper in Philadelphia with his first essay. And it said, "Mr. Oswald, as Independent Gazetteer seems free for the discussion of all public matters, I expect you will give the following a place in your next." Now, all of the newspapers would not accept anti-Federalist writings. As a matter of fact, quite a few would not accept any objections whatsoever to the Constitution. This paper, owned by Eleazar Oswald, did. But are we not experiencing that same thing today? Try to put up something contrary to the state on Facebook, YouTube, because you're sure not going to hear it on the evening news. I promise you that. Which brings back that old quote. We will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false. William Casey, 1982. Jumping back to Sentinel, he says, to the free men of Pennsylvania, friends, countrymen, and fellow citizens, permit one of yourselves to put you in mind of certain liberties and privileges secured to you by the Constitution of this Commonwealth. Talking about their state constitution, and to beg your serious attention to his uninterested opinion upon the plan of federal government submitted to your consideration before you surrender these great and valuable privileges up forever. Your present frame of government secures to you a right to hold yourselves, houses, papers, and possessions free from search and seizure, and therefore warrants granted without oaths or affirmations first made, affording sufficient foundations for them, whereby any officer or messenger may be commanded or required to search your house or seize your persons or property, not particularly described in such warrant, shall not be granted. Your Constitution further provides that in controversies respecting property and in suits between man and man, the parties have a right to a trial by jury, which ought to be held sacred. It also provides and declares that the people have a right of freedom of speech and of writing and publishing their sentiments. Therefore, the freedom of the press ought not to be restrained. Well, now, it's kind of funny. I've brought this up to people before, and I've had people tell me and say, well, we have that now. The Constitution has that. The Federalists didn't want you to have that. They did not want you to have it. They voted against all of these rights unanimously at the Constitutional Convention. I don't know why that people need to know more than that about the Federalists, is that they voted unanimously against a Bill of Rights. By state, that should be stipulated. And so, that is something we should look at. They did not want you to have freedom of speech. They did not want you to have the freedom of writing and publishing your sentiments. They did not want you to have the freedom of the press. They did not want you to be able to protect yourself from your property being, or your homes being searched without a warrant. And people today cannot accept that. They will go, oh no, the Federalists, they guaranteed our rights. No, they didn't. They didn't want you to have any. That's why they fought against a Bill of Rights. That's why they voted against a Bill of Rights. And again, I'm going to be redundant, but probably the greatest exchange at the convention took place between James Wilson and George Mason on this point. George Mason had made a motion for a Bill of Rights, and James Wilson opposed it. And he said, no, we can't have a Bill of Rights because the people have so many rights, we can't list them all. And the people's, all of their rights are protected by their state constitutions. We don't need to put a Bill of Rights into the Constitution. And of course, again, that was unanimously supported. But what did George Mason say? George Mason said, no. With your ability of, with the federal government, with the ability to collect unlimited and impose unlimited taxes on the people, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, and your ability to do that to promote the general welfare with any means you deem necessary and proper, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, and the fact that all of the laws made by the federal government will be supreme, Article 6, Paragraph 2, to any of our state laws, the states have nothing. So the Federalists not only did away and voted against giving the people any rights, the Federalists also created within the Constitution the ability to override any states that the people might have had in their state constitutions. So that is the you know, that, pardon me, that, and people just can't understand that. They can't get that through their heads. They can't understand this. And yet there are still people out there running around saying, oh, this Constitution was inspired by God. Read Galatians chapter 5, verse 1. And tell me that God did not want the people to have liberty. But anyway, proceeding on with Sentinel. The late convention have submitted to your consideration a plan of a new federal government. The subject is highly interesting to your future welfare, whether it be calculated to promote the great ends of civil society, the happiness and prosperity of the community. It behooves you well to consider, uninfluenced by the authority of names. He was trying to tell the people, don't buy this because somebody else told you it's good. Don't buy this because Benjamin Franklin said, you have a republic if you can keep it. As a matter of fact, Sentinel wrote that through the majority, and I don't know where he got his information, we'll look at that later, but Sentinel wrote in another essay that Franklin was so senile, he was not sure Franklin had any idea what he was doing when he was there anyway.
Mike?
Yes, sir.
That particular sentence, he's specifically referring to George Washington and Benjamin Franklin.
Yes, he mentions that later. Exactly.
Yeah, that's how I just wanted to, you know, clarify that. So as people listening go forward, that's who Samuel Bryan's talking about. He's talking about the influence of George Washington and Benjamin Franklin, who were basically the rock stars of that era, so to speak.
True. Very well put, Cal. Going back to Sentinel. Instead of that frenzy of enthusiasm that has actuated the citizens of Philadelphia in their approbation of the proposed plan, before it was possible that it could be the result of a national investigation into its principles, it ought to be dispassionately and deliberately examined on its own intrinsic merit, the only criterion of your patronage. If ever free and unbiased discussion was proper or necessary, it is on such an occasion. All of the blessings of liberty and the dearest privileges of free men are now at stake and dependent on your present conduct. What a statement. All of the blessings of liberty and the dearest privileges of free men are now at stake and dependent on your present conduct. Those who are competent to the task of developing the principles of government ought to be encouraged to come forward and thereby the better enable the people to make a proper judgment. For the science of government is so abstruse that few are able to judge for themselves. Without such assistance, the people are too apt to yield an implicit assent to the opinions of those characters whose abilities are held in the highest esteem, and to choose in whose integrity and patriotism they can confide, not considering that the love of domination is generally in proportion to talents, abilities, and superior requirements, and that the men of the greatest purity of intention may be made instruments of despotism in the hands of the artful and designing. I can't read that phrase without thinking about Gouverneur Marsh. If it were not for the stability and attachment which time and habit gives to forms of government, it would be in the power of the enlightened and aspiring few, if they should combine at any time to destroy the best establishments and even make the people of the instruments of their own subjugation. Oh, wow, that's exactly where we are today. The instruments of subjugation of the federal government. What a man, this guy had, he was visionary. The late revolution, having effaced in a great measure all former habits, and the present institution are so recent that there exists not that general reluctance to innovation, so remarkable in old communities, and which accords with reason, for the most comprehensive mind cannot foresee the full operation of material changes on civil polity. It is the genius of the common law to resist innovation. That is so brilliant. It is, wow. He is just saying that, look, we haven't been free from the ravages of the tyrant George III long enough to take stock of where we are and where we should go. And he said, you know, like old communities, he's talking about people who have experienced a form of government for a long time. He's basically saying, look, our freedom and our liberty are new to us. Let's not make any rash decisions because our entire experience has been that of despotism under King George III. Let's not bring back the same thing with a different name. The brilliance of Samuel Bryan is just absolutely amazes me. Any thoughts now, Cal?
There it goes. All right, there's the mute. Well, what he's doing, he's kind of echoing what Thomas Jefferson said in the Declaration of Independence, where he says, prudence indeed shall dictate the governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are most disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms of which they are accustomed. He's saying you guys aren't even accustomed to this government yet. And it's not normal to just throw the baby out with the bathwater here because there's some perceived little problems going on is what he's basically saying. Because the Federalists really blew little minor problems way out of proportion to excite a sentiment within the people to want to adopt a new form of government. They were propagandized and manipulated. And that's what he's addressing right here.
Big time. Great correlation, Cal, to bring in the Declaration of Independence. Great correlation there. Thank you for that. Moving on with Sentinel, he says, the wealthy and ambitious who in every community think they have a right to lord it over their fellow creatures have availed themselves very successfully of this favorable disposition. For the people thus unsettled in their sentiments have been prepared to accede to any extreme of government. All the distresses and difficulties they experience proceeding from various causes have been ascribed to the impotency of the present Confederation, and thence they have been led to expect full relief from the adoption of the proposed system of government, and in the other event, immediately ruin and annihilation as a nation. These characters flatter themselves that they have lulled all distrust and jealousy of their new plan by gaining the concurrence of the two men in whom America has the highest confidence and now triumphantly exult in their completion of their long mediated schemes of power and aggrandizement. There, Cal, he's referring to Washington and Franklin again. He said, I would be very far from insinuating that the two illustrious personages alluded to have not the welfare of their country at heart, but that the unsuspecting goodness and zeal of the one has been imposed on, and a subject of which he must be necessarily inexperienced from his other arduous engagements, and that the weakness and indecision attendant an old age has been practiced on the other. Here, without mentioning their names, he says, Washington has been busy leading the army, and he is not well versed on government, and he is being led astray by flattery, which is exactly what happened. And then he said, then he mentioned the weaknesses and indecision attendant an old age has been practiced on the other, meaning that was Franklin. I am fearful that the principles of government inculcated in Mr. Adams' treatise and enforced in the numerous essays and paragraphs in the newspapers have misled some well-designing members of the late convention. But it will appear in the sequel that the construction of the proposed plan of government is infinitely more extravagant. Now, here is what most people are unaware, guys, is that the Federalists started a media blitz for the Constitution before they started the convention. Then they hit heavily in the newspaper about the genius of these men. And whatever they come up with should be accepted. Don't question it. Nancy Pelosi, let's just pass this thing, find out what's in it. That was what the newspapers were telling. That is what Sentinel is alluding to. And he says, I have been anxiously expecting that some enlightened patriot would, ere this, have taken up the pen to expose the futility and counteract the baneful tendency of such principles. Mr. Adams' sine qua non of a good government is three balancing powers whose repelling qualities are to produce an equilibrium of interest and thereby promote the happiness of the whole community. Talking about the separation of powers there, folks. He asserts that the administrators of every government will ever be actuated by views of private interest and ambition to the prejudice of the public good. Adams admitted it. Let me read that again. Adams asserts that the administrators of every government will ever be actuated by views of private interest and ambition to the prejudice of the public good. Wow. That therefore the only effectual method to secure the rights of the people and promote their welfare is to create an opposition of interest between the members of two distinct bodies in the exercise of the powers of government and balanced by those of a third. This hypothesis supposes human wisdom competent to the task of instituting three co-equal orders of government and a corresponding weight in the community to enable them respectively to exercise their several parts, and whose views and interests should be so distinct as to prevent a coalition of any two of them for the destruction of the third. Now that's amazing, because I'm going to go over a Supreme Court ruling in 1803, just a little over 10 years after this government first started. And today you will hear people talk all the time about the wonderful co-equal branches of government. About they can all, they always, you know, we have the power, we have the balance of three different, yeah, right. At the end of the Federalist reign of government, at the end of John Adams' first administration, the Federalists were being criticized so heavily for the corruption and tyranny that they had visited on the people, including about a 70% inflation rate of their money. They were being criticized so heavily that Congress, Federalist Congress, passed the Sedition Act of 1798, which stated that you cannot say anything about the federal government. You cannot be critical of the federal government. You either in print or in word, you're not to say anything negative about the federal government. Nothing. So it passes, and it passes review of the Supreme Court. Not a formal decision, just a review. So from the very beginning, this government is saying, you people out there, just shut the hell up. You can't even say anything bad about us. I don't know what kind of government you call that. What is that, a monarchy? Despotism? Would that be similar to maybe Stalin or Hitler? You can't even say anything about us that's negative. Well, unfortunately, this member of Congress from Vermont didn't get the memo, or he didn't care. And he publicly criticized Adams and his administration on the floor of the House of Representatives and was arrested and thrown into jail. He had a trial. I don't know if I told you his name was Matthew Lyon, L-Y-O-N, but he had a trial. And at that trial, the judge was a Supreme Court justice named Samuel Chase. And so Chase tells the jury after the case is heard. Lyon says, here's what I said. Here's everything that I said, and all of it is true. And Samuel Chase tells the jury, it doesn't make any difference if it's true or not. Mr. Lyon said this, and therefore he is guilty. You cannot take into consideration if he told the truth, only if he criticized the government. So the jury finds him guilty with that instruction from the Supreme Court. They find him guilty. He is sent to prison. He is the only member of Congress in U.S. history to be reelected while in prison. But another thing happens because of the Sedition Act. And that is James Madison, who has now teamed up with Thomas Jefferson. He has left the Federalist. He is now supporting Thomas Jefferson. So Jefferson was vice president. So Jefferson goes to Kentucky and writes the Kentucky resolutions. And those are passed by the Kentucky legislature. James Madison goes to Virginia, writes the Virginia resolutions. Good, but not as strong as what Jefferson wrote. And so they write these resolutions opposing the Sedition Act. Well, 1798, 1799, all this is going on. 1800, you got an election for president. Adams is running. Adams is president, but he's got some tough challengers out there. Aaron Burr, Thomas Jefferson. And so here we are with a tough election coming up. And I won't go into the details of that election. That election is something else. It was settled in the House of Representatives like any disputed election should be. So it was settled in the House of Representatives. Jefferson is now president. Okay, Inauguration Day is coming up. So good old John Adams says, I'm going in a midnight appointment. Appoints John Marshall as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He then appoints a bevy of federal judges with the Federalist intent to stymie anything Jefferson tries to do as president, to stymie it in the court system. So one of the people promised a job or promised a federal magistrate's position, which is a federal judgeship, was this guy named Marbury. Marbury's appointment doesn't get delivered. Jefferson is inaugurated. Jefferson's Secretary of State is James Madison. James Madison and Jefferson say, oh, we found this appointment for Marbury. Let's throw it away. We're not going to deliver it at all. Too bad. Marbury sues James Madison for his appointment, takes the case to the Supreme Court. And in that case, which all should have been decided, all that should have been mentioned was whether Marbury should have gotten his appointment. But here's one of those little crazy things that John Marshall should have recused himself in that case because he was the Secretary of State for John Adams who didn't deliver the appointment to Mr. Marbury. But now he's sitting in over as Chief Justice. And what he does is creates law out of whole cloth, totally unconstitutionally. He creates in the Marbury case the right of judicial review. Now that sounds really good. But what it gave, and nowhere in the Constitution, nowhere, is the Supreme Court given the right of judicial review. John Marshall makes it law with his decision. Judicial review means that anything the president does or anything the Congress does is subject to the review of the Supreme Court. Totally unconstitutional. But if you go to law school, That's the first case you study because you're a lawyer, and the only people who get to be judges are lawyers. So you are taught right off that the controlling branch of the federal government is the judiciary, because they have judicial review of the other two. Now stop and think. Does the president get to review the Supreme Court decisions? Does the Congress review the Supreme Court decisions? No. But the judiciary rules the others. After this, they tried to impeach Samuel Chase for partisan reviews and for making stupid things like telling people, hey, you can't, as a jury, you can't decide whether it's true or not. You just decide whether it was done or not. They tried to impeach him. He was impeached in the House of Representatives, but the Senate found him not guilty. At that point is when Thomas Jefferson said, impeachment is but a scarecrow. People, since 1803, we have not had a separation of powers in this country. Now, true, we had Andrew Jackson, who did tell John Marshall, yes, sir, Mr. Supreme Court Justice, that's your decision. Let's see you enforce it. But it had to do with the National Bank. We still ended up with a National Bank. I was so proud of Jackson for saying that, but we still ended up with a National Bank. We still ended up with the Federal Reserve. And today, the Supreme Court can decide what the president has to do or whether what he's done is constitutional. The Supreme Court can decide what laws passed by Congress are constitutional. Where is the review of the Supreme Court? Who gets to review the Supreme Court's decisions? Nobody. So Thomas Jefferson was right. If the final arbiters of what is and what is not constitutional is left with the judiciary, we do not have a democracy. We do not have a republic. We have an oligarchy of 9 unelected lawyers, politically well-connected lawyers, serving for life, who run our country. And that's exactly what we have today. Cal, can you offer any argument to that?
No, I don't have any argument to what you said. The only thing I could say was there hasn't been a separation of powers since the Alien and Sedition Act. So it was actually before that. The Alien and Sedition Act, Madison actually pointed it out, that the Alien and Sedition Act were against good Republican and constitutional government, because there was no separation of powers in that law. So just to say, you know, when there was no separation of powers, I would say there never really was a separation of powers in the Constitution to begin with. Once you melded executive power into the Senate, you don't have separation of powers.
Well, I could make the case, and Dave, take my case apart here. I'm going to make a case. You tear it up.
Okay.
All right. My case is that there never was a separation of powers from the very beginning. And that is because there was a Federalist president, George Washington. He appointed every member of the Supreme Court. They were all Federalists. The Federalists had control of the House of Representatives, and they had control of the Senate. 10-1 in the Senate, 5-1 in the House of Representatives was the odds of the Federalists. All of the federal judges in any position were Federalists. So you got to the end of the Federalist term, 2 terms of Washington, 1 term of Adams, and the people were sick to death of it. And they were rejecting the Federalist in favor of what Jefferson called the Democratic Republicans. So they were favoring them. And then in 1803, you get the Marbury v. Madison, which puts the courts over the other two branches of government. Now, I've had people tell me when I've made this discussion in classes, I've had people tell me, well, hey, don't worry about that because, you know, the Congress can pass a law. You know, we were talking at that time about Roe v. Wade, and the Supreme Court had made the decision. And they said, well, Congress can just pass a law making abortion unconstitutional and illegal. And I said, yeah, and the Supreme Court can find that unconstitutional. They're still in charge. Tear my case apart, Dave.
Well, Mike, I don't think I can. You know, it's like some of the other things that we've been told about this federal government. It's all smoke and mirrors, and it's all an illusion right from the very start. And it really explains how we got to where we are today, which is essentially a federal government that is working against the people in essentially every aspect. And the only other thing I'd add is you've got to love the attitude of Andrew Jackson. You know, let's see you enforce it. It's too bad we don't have that kind of strong-willed thinking today.
Well, also, John Marshall used his position, and that's a great assessment, Dave. John Marshall used his position. We can go to 1819 in McCulloch versus Maryland. And he used his position, even though what he declared wasn't even an issue in the case. But he bled it over and created it so he could rule on something that wasn't even before the court. That is making law from the bench. Today, go to any law school and ask who the greatest Chief Justice was, and they will tell you unanimously it was John Marshall. Because John Marshall made the judicial branch the ruler over everybody.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. And if the Supreme Court can declare abortion is somehow a constitutional right, they can declare anything a constitutional right, regardless of what your views on abortion are.
Well, that's exactly right. And they can also elect a president as they did, and they can tell a vote, tell a state to stop counting votes as they did Florida in 2000. That was totally unconstitutional. There's nothing in the Constitution gives the Supreme Court the right to tell a state to stop counting votes. But then you noticed how these great heralded ones didn't want anything to do with this 2020 election. No, I ain't touching that. No. Why? Why did they not even want to hear it, guys? If you can't see that you've been had by this federal government, if you can't understand that, because I'm going to promise you something else, all of you Second Amendment right folks out there, and nobody, I believe, is any more ludicrous than these people who claim that they're Second Amendment rights people, and they go to legislatures, and they beg legislators, don't pass this law, pass this law, pass that. People, if you have to go to the legislature to beg them for your rights, you don't have any rights. And every gun control law in this country is unconstitutional. If the Second Amendment means anything, every gun law, regardless of who passed it, regardless of what court said it's constitutional, is not. It's not constitutional. And I promise you, if this court gets to hear anything having to do with gun rights, people, the Supreme Court is going to rule in favor of the government every time. To hell with you, John Q. Citizen. They're going to rule for the government. You know, I thought people went to, you know, thought they had a wet dream with Heller versus D.C. when they ruled that, yes, the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right. I don't need you to tell me that. It's a human right. But Scalia kissed him. And then I'm not going to say what he did after that. But he kissed him. And then he said, all rights are subject to reasonable restrictions. If your right is subject to a restriction, you don't have a right. Well, we're about through the first hour here, guys. I hope I haven't preached too much.
Not at all. I'm enjoying it.
Well, we're going to jump back over to Old Sentinel when we come back on the other side, and I am glad we are coming up on a break because I need one.
Well, Mike, I just think you're laying out a great roadmap of how we got to where we are today. We've been on the same path since the very beginning, it turns out.
Well, it was designed that way. In today's world, when people say, well, you know, the problem is we just haven't elected the right people. Well, you know, you can elect anybody you want to shoot you. When they do, you're still dead. An election is but a pacifier that they give the people to suck on while they get screwed.
Ugh. Yep, that's right. I agree.
What are you chuckling about, Cal?
Oh, just thoughts in my head. Where Sam O'Brien, he comments on how, you know, some educated people need to kind of speak up here, people that really understand how governments work, because it's true, most people don't understand governments or the science of governments or the history of governments, me included, and I study the heck out of this, and I still claim ignorance in the fully
back understand. On the, thanks, Cal. Back on the flip side.
At Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
All right, thanks, everyone, for coming back for the second hour of Addicted to... No, that's Sunday. Sorry about that. For coming back to Dare to Think Out Loud. Getting ahead of myself here, guys. We are discussing Sentinel in many respects. We're using what Sentinel said 230-some years ago to point out that things ain't changed much, Jack. And the system was designed to do exactly what it's doing. As you look around and you say, well, I got these rights. No, you don't. Federalists didn't want you to have any rights, and you don't have any. So, unfortunately, that's where it is in this world today, because you have believed a lie. You have been bamboozled, according to Carl Sagan. And I was just thinking, in today's world, how wrapped up that people get in a president or a presidential election proves how little they understand their own government and their own situation. Because in their minds, that person is a king. And I don't believe anyone has shown that any more than Trump supporters. They might even think he has some kind of holy significance above a king. And I know I said that. So as soon as I said something about Trump, I became a liberal. You know, I can't just criticize government and the way it's made up. To most people, if I do, if I criticize government to a conservative, I'm a liberal. If I criticize the government to a liberal, I'm a conservative. Does anyone see the problem in that whole thing? But anyway, I'm going to jump ahead here, guys. Jump ahead 15 of Sentinel's essays. And I'm going to jump ahead to Sentinel number 16. And he says, to the people of Pennsylvania, fellow citizens, the new Constitution, instead of being the panacea or cure of grievance so delusively represented by its advocates, will be found upon examination like Pandora's box, replete with every evil. The most specious clauses of this system of ambition and iniquity contain latent mischief and premeditated villainy. By Section 9 of the first article, no ex post facto law shall be passed. This sounds very well upon a superficial consideration, and I dare say has been read by most people with approbation. Government undoubtedly ought to avoid retrospective laws as far as may be, as they are generally injurious and fraudulent. Yet, there are occasions when such laws are not only just, but highly requisite. An ex post facto law is a law made after the fact so that the Congress under the new Constitution are precluded from all control over any transactions made prior to its establishment. Now, I bet you didn't know that. You didn't know history. And this people in this Congress went there and put that into the Constitution to make sure their ex post facto law, first article, section 9, they did that intentionally so that anything they had done illegal prior to attending that constitutional convention, including the constitutional convention, any crimes that they may have committed there, because they were all committing crimes, because we had a constitution, they were violating it. So Article 1, Section 9 said no ex post facto laws. So once that constitution was ratified, nobody could charge them for the crimes they committed under the old constitution. Kind of neat, huh? The way they did that. He says this prohibition would screen the numerous public defaulters, as no measure could be constitutionally taken to compel them to render an account and restore the public monies. Ooh, did some of these people at the Constitutional Convention, did they owe the government money? Kind of unusual there, too. It says, hitherto, these characters from their great weight in numbers have had the influence to prevent an investigation of their accounts. But if this Constitution be established, they may set the public at defiance, as they would be completely exonerated of all demands of the United States against them. This is not a strained construction of this section, but the proper evident meaning of the words, which not even the ingenuity or sophistry of the Caledonian can disguise from the meanest capacity. The Caledonian was James Wilson, by the way. However, if this matter admitted of any doubt, it would be removed by the following consideration. Viz, that the new Constitution is founded upon a dissolution of the present Articles of Confederation and is an original compact between those states, or rather those individuals who accede to it. Consequently, all contracts, debts, and engagements in favor or against the United States under the old government are canceled unless they are provided for in the new Constitution. The framers of this Constitution appear to have been aware of such consequence by stipulating in Article 6 that all debts contracted and engagements entered into before the adoption of this Constitution shall be valid against the United States under the new Constitution, but they included no provision that the debts due to the United States shall be valid or recoverable. Now, how neat to write a new Constitution to cover your crimes. I bet you've never heard that before anywhere. Sentinel brings it up, and he brought it up perfectly. Why, if you are a bookkeeper, or if you had bookkeeping 101, if you know anything about a ledger sheet, why would you stipulate in the Constitution that the debts owed by the United States are to be paid and honored, but any debts owed to the United States are not mentioned? Cal, help me out here, buddy.
I don't know what I can do to help you out. You just laid out the embezzlement and fraud committed by the Bank of North America.
Well, what is that? Hosea 4:6, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge, and they have rejected knowledge. Happens a lot, it seems.
Yeah. So, and Mike, I would just add that, it's fascinating how you're talking about, you know, making a new constitution to cover their crimes. And I think we're seeing an attempt of that today with, the so-called Great Reset, an attempt to paper over their financial crimes with a new system before the whole thing comes unraveled like a cheap sweater.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And I expect at some point in time, we've already protected the pharmaceutical industry. They were protected under Ronald Reagan, 87. They can't be found liable for anything they do with this vaccine. And not only that, but we're also hearing that because it's an experimental vaccine, that a lot of insurance agencies or insurance companies will not cover any maladies that occur from this vaccine because it's experimental.
So well, it's an emergency use. You know, it's an emergency, Mike.
Right. So now we are covering, we're covering the people who are making all the money. Here's the same thing that was happening in 1787. That's why I said these things are so parallel. Sometimes it, I get cold chills when I think about it. We're covering up the people, as Cal said, who robbed the First Bank of the United States, which was the Bank of North America. So they robbed money from there, and nobody covers that quite like did Sentinel. So they've stolen this money. So then they go to Philadelphia to write a constitution to where there no laws can be passed to make them pay it back, nor can there be anybody who owes this new government is relieved of that debt with the new constitution. And you know, guys, I studied for the longest time until I got to delving into this stuff myself. I had read the Constitution I don't know how many times. How many people walk around with a little pocket Constitution? I know it used to be a popular thing. Used to hand them out at the Tea Party meeting so you could put the Constitution in your pocket. You might not know what the hell it means, but you're still carrying it around, make people think you know what you're talking about. It's like carrying an empty gun. If you don't know what's in it, you might as well carry an empty gun. So here we have a fraud committed on the people with this Constitution. Now, these debts owed to the United States, how were they going to be paid? Taxes. Unlimited taxation on the poor people who had fought this war and had suffered through 8 years of war. Those are the people who are going to pay for it. While the people who stole the money sit around and smile and run the government. It's not different today, people. There is no difference. So Sentinel says this is a striking omission and must have been designed, as debts of the latter description would naturally occur and claim equal attention with the former. This article implied cancels all debts due to the United States prior to the establishment of the new Constitution. If equal provision had been made for the debts due to the United States as against the United States, the ex post facto clause would not have so pernicious an operation. The Immaculate Convention, I love it when he uses that phrase, the Immaculate Convention that is said to have possessed the fullness of patriotism, wisdom, and virtue contained a number of the principal public defaulters. And these were the most influential members and chiefly instrumental in the framing of the new Constitution. There were several of this description in the deputation from the state of Pennsylvania, who have longstanding and immense accounts to settle and millions to refund. The late financier alone, Robert Morris, he doesn't say Robert Morris, but that's who it was, in the capacity of chairman of the Commercial Committee of Congress early in the late war, was entrusted with millions of public money, which to this day remain unaccounted for, nor has he settled his accounts as financier. The others may also find it a convenient method to balance accounts with the public. They are sufficiently known and therefore need not be designated. This will account for the zealous attachment of such characters to the new Constitution and their dread of its investigation and discussion. It may be said that the new Congress would rather break through the Constitution than suffer the public to be defrauded of so much treasure when the burthens and distresses of the people are so very great. But this is not to be expected from the characters of which that Congress would in all probability be composed, if we may judge from the predominant influence and interest these defaulters now possess in many of the states. Besides, should Congress be disposed to violate the fundamental articles of the Constitution for the sake of public justice, they would be prevented in so doing by their own oaths. Think about that. They took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. The Constitution, as it was written, protected the people who had robbed money from the United States. So even if the Congress wanted to try these people, if there were people, if, you know, what they were doing was planning, if enough anti-federalists get elected into the Congress, they may want to issue some warrants for us for stealing this money. They made it to where that couldn't be done because they swore an oath to the Constitution. Wow. But even if this should not prove an obstacle, if it can be supposed that any set of men would perjure themselves for the public good and combat a host of enemies on such terms, still it would be of no avail, as there is a further barrier imposed between the public and these defaulters, namely the Supreme Court. Oh, buddy, they depended on them from the very beginning. Whose province it would be to determine the constitutionality of any law that may be controverted, and supposing no bribery or corrupt influence practiced on the bench of judges, it would be their sworn duty to refuse their sanction to laws made in the face and contrary to the letter and spirit of the Constitution. As any law to compel the settlement of accounts and payment of monies depending and due under the old Confederation would be. The first section of the third article gives the Supreme Court cognizance of not only the laws, but of all cases arising under the Constitution, which empowers this tribunal to decide upon the construction of the Constitution itself in the last resort. This is so extraordinary, so unprecedented an authority, that the intention investing of it must have been to put it out of the power of Congress, even by breaking through the Constitution, to compel these defaulters to restore the public treasure. That's, wow. Help me out here, Cal.
Well, that goes back into, you know, figuring out who all the shareholders were in this Bank of North America and correlating them with how many of them actually were in attendance to the convention and how many were members of the ratifying conventions that ratified the Constitution. This was a big scam to protect their own backside. And another point to make out is the fact that there was a debt, a foreign debt and a domestic debt. The foreign debt was being met. This is addressing the domestic debt, which was owed to these guys. They owed the government money and the government owed them money. They made sure that the government paid them the money they owed and eliminated the money they owed to the government through their constitution.
Yeah, nice work if you can get it, right?
It's genius.
Yeah, and Cal, I thought you touched on something really important. You know, who were the shareholders exactly in this bank? It's a bit of a mystery. And I'd really like to know what connections these people had to the Bank of England, because I think it all the trail is going to lead back there the more you look into it.
It does. It leads back there. Finding the smoking gun, yeah, that's like finding the 69 essays of Sentinel. But yeah, it all circumstantial evidence leads it back to the Bank of England.
Now, I don't think there's any doubt, because the Bank of England was the Bank of North America was created as a mirror image of the Bank of England.
Well, absolutely. And Mike, you know, I've been looking into, you know, central banks, and the Bank of England is really the template for all modern central banks around the world since 1694.
And what did the creator, William Paterson, of the Bank of England in, 1696? Or 94 maybe. Anyway, William Paterson, what did he say when he created the bank? We will be able to create profits. No, we will be able to gather profits on money we create out of nothing.
Exactly. And that was actually on the circular to attract investors for the bank.
Yes. Say, come and invest in my bank, because we're going to get interest on money we create out of nothing. What is the Federal Reserve? The Federal Reserve creates money with keystrokes. If you are, the Bank of America, you call up the Federal Reserve and say, hey, we need some cash. All right, well, how much do you need? Oh, well, you know, send us, $50 million. Okay. There it is.
Yeah.
You got it. Now, if you go in and borrow that money, you're going to be paid some pretty good interest. Especially if it's on credit cards.
Right. And the original loan that the Bank of England made was at 6%, I believe. And that was to fund Europe's war against France.
Mm-hmm.
And to expand that's really how they created the empire of England, was with that bank.
Should we bring in the British East India Company?
Yeah,
there you go.
It is charter in 1699.
The same thing.
Yeah,
it's history is full of this stuff, even as well as they have hidden it. It's full of this stuff.
Yeah, these aren't coincidences.
No. And, you know, you tune in here, dare to think out loud. At least, hopefully, we're able to bring you some insights, no matter how mad you get at us for doing it. We're able to bring you some insights into parts of history of how it's put together that I promise you, you will never be taught in school. At least I haven't. Have any of you guys heard any of this in school?
No, they don't teach you this in school.
No.
Well, let's look at old Sentinel number 18. I'm jumping around here a little bit. To the people of Pennsylvania, fellow citizens, the measures that are pursuing to effect the establishment of the new Constitution are so repugnant to truth, honor, and the well-being of society as would disgrace any cause. If the nature and tendency of this system were to be judged of by the conduct of its framers and patrons, what a picture of ambition and villainy would present itself to our view. From the specimens they have already given, anticipation may easily realize the consequences that would flow from the new Constitution if established. We may bid adieu to all the blessings of liberty, to all of the fruits of the late glorious assertion of the rights of human nature, made at the expense of so much blood and treasure. Yet such is the infatuation of many well-meaning persons that they view with indifference the atrocious villainy which characterizes the proceedings of the advocates of the new system. The daring, and in most parts of the United States, the successful methods of practice to shackle the press and destroy the freedom of discussion, the silencing of the Pennsylvania Herald to prevent the publication of the invaluable debates of the late convention of this state, the total suppression of real intelligence and of the illuminations of patriotism through the medium of the post office, the systematic fraud and deception that pervade the Union, the stigmatizing and by every art which ambition and malice can suggest, laboring to vilify, intimidate, and trample underfoot every disinterested patriot who, preferring his country's good to every other consideration, has the courage to stand forth the champion of liberty and the people. And the intercepting of private confidential letters passing from man to man, violating the sacredness of a seal, and thus infringing upon one of the first privileges of free men, that of communicating with each other. Cal, with what I just read, do you find any parallels with exactly what's happening in this country right now?
You weren't just reading about what's happening about right now? that fits exactly to a T what's going on right now.
Well, you know, it's It's absolutely, you know, to read part of it again, the daring and in most parts of the United States, the successful methods practiced to shackle the press and destroy the freedom of discussion. YouTube, Facebook, all of these mediums that are being shut down if you have an opposing viewpoint to the government. You don't have an opposing viewpoint to YouTube. You don't have an opposing viewpoint to Zuckerberg. Your opposing viewpoints you're putting in there that Zuckerberg and YouTube are censoring are criticisms of the government. So why should a third party care? If it was an open discussion, and here, Sentinel alludes to, and I could go into the story of this, the Federalist shut down the Pennsylvania Herald. You know, which takes me back to, gosh, I'm sorry to jump around here, but takes me back to the Oklahoma City bombing when one station, one television station in Oklahoma kept pursuing the truth about the Oklahoma City bombing. And guess what? Some people from New York came down and bought it out. And no more discussion of a conspiracy at Oklahoma City. This happens over and over and over again. And yet the people are still saying, oh, my constitutional rights. All I got to do is elect somebody. Pardon me, guys, but I can always tell when I must be impassioned about what I am saying, because as I look when I'm on the program, if my dogs go run under the bed because they think I'm angry, I must be doing a good job. Come on, Dave.
Hey, Mike.
That deserves a chuckle, Dave.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Go ahead, Cal.
Well, I just wanted to read one of the sentences again, but I want to change the last two words of new system. And Sentinel says, yet such is the infatuation of many well-meaning persons, talking about everybody, that they view with indifference the atrocious villainy which circumstances the proceedings of the advocates of the former president. Does that describe?
Yeah, I thought of that too.
Did I transpose that correctly?
I started to do that in the beginning, but I didn't want to jump all over the Hopium folks again. They get quite angry when you do.
Well, sometimes I think they need a big stick and not the carrot.
Well, Cal, are you aware of the letter that Samuel Bryan sent to Thomas Jefferson upon Jefferson's election?
No, I'm not, but I hope you make us aware, because I'll bet it's great.
Well, I'm going to send it to you. And,
okay.
You know, I lost a little confidence in Samuel Bryan because he was actually asking for a job. But he illuminated something that I hadn't seen actually confirmed before. I thought he was the penman or the author of The Descent of the Minority of the Delegates in Pennsylvania. You familiar with that?
Yeah, I'm familiar with The Descent.
Okay, well, he wrote that. And I always thought that he did, but then in the letter to Thomas Jefferson, he says, he admits that he wrote that. And, of course, he refers to it in his own writings. He says, notwithstanding many thousands of copies of the Reasons of Dissent of the Minority of the late convention of this state were printed and forwarded in every direction and by various conveyances, scarcely any of these got beyond the limits of this state. And most of them not until a long time after their publication. The printer of these reasons, by particular desire, addressed a copy of them to every printer in the Union, in every state, which he sent to the post office to be conveyed in the mail as usual, long before the new arrangement, as it is called, took place. And yet we since find that none of them reached their place of destination. This is a full demonstration of the subserviency of the post office and a striking evidence of the vigilance that has been exerted to suppress information. It is greatly to be regretted that the opposition in Massachusetts were denied the benefits of our discussion, that the unanswerable dissent of our minority did not reach Boston in time to influence the decision of the great question by their convention, as it would, in all probability, have enabled patriotism to triumph. I mean,
are you saying that the Federalist run post office stopped the mail from getting through?
There was a reason George Washington fired the head of the post office, because it became so obvious, Cal, they couldn't even cover it up anymore.
Yeah. Well, this is before even, George Washington was president. Benjamin Franklin, wasn't he in charge of it then?
Yes, he was, with his good friend Tench Cox.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We can't have this truth and information being disseminated amongst the people. Oh, no.
If your proposal for government was so good, you would look forward to people to oppose it because you could prove them wrong. Just like if this election in 2020 wasn't fraudulent, the Supreme Court should have been chomping at the bit to prove all of these conspiracy theorists wrong. But they didn't. And let's see, I had a gentleman call me this morning from Arkansas and tell me that there was a 5-4 majority of conservatives on the Supreme Court. If that is so, why didn't they hear the cases against the fraudulent election? Yes. And then on with Sentinel. He says, as the liberties of all the states in the Union are struck at in common with those of Pennsylvania by the conduct of the Postmaster General and his deputies, I trust that the example which her legislature has set by instructing her delegates in Congress on this subject will be followed by the others, that with one accord they will hurl their vengeance on the venal instruments of ambition who have presumed to prostrate one of the principal bulwarks of liberty. In a confederated government of such extent as the United States, the freest communication of sentiment and information should be maintained, as the liberties, happiness, and welfare of the Union depend upon a concert of counsels. The signals of alarm, whenever ambition should rear its baneful head, ought to be uniform. Without this communication between the members of the Confederacy, the freedom of the press, if it could be maintained, is so severed a situation, would cease to be a security against the encroachments of tyranny. People, apply that to today. Apply that to your COVID vaccine stories. Apply that to the COVID stories from the very beginning. Apply that to almost anything you want to apply it to. In today's world, and that's one of the things that is so, makes me think of George Santayana, when he said, the people who fail to learn the lessons of history are destined to repeat its mistakes. We don't know about these usurpations of liberty that were done during the time of our Constitution, our founding era. We don't know those. And today we're watching the same thing happen again. The suppression of the truth by the media. The suppression of truth by anyone who has anything to do with the government. If you are I'm going to go back to the example of YouTube and Facebook. All you should be worried about in those positions is the people who are coming to your site. You're trying to make money, allegedly. So you put these out there. I'm trying to make money on this. So here's what I'm going to do. And you should put up dissenting opinions. It should be a public debate. You know, I got to give the governor of Florida just all kind of credit. He had a meeting with four, maybe five of the people who believe that COVID was a hoax and that the vaccine is terrible, dangerous. He actually sat down and had a meeting with them. Shortly after that, the press starts attacking the credibility of all the people he met with. You know, Dave, Cal, how long is it going to be before the people in this country realize that they have been screwed, blued, and tattooed?
Well, Mike, you know, that's interesting. Yeah, I wonder who the names of the people were that he met with, because I think one thing that might happen, there might be some serious blowback from this once people realized how they've been had and, you know, how many people's lives, their livelihood has been ruined from a fraudulent event, you know, probably just a bad flu season, if anything, you know.
Well, you know, we had the bad flu season, but, you know, it completely wiped out pneumonia. Nobody had pneumonia anymore. And, you know, it's such a fraud. But, Dave, if you and Cal will just chat for a minute, I'll try to locate those people that the governor of Florida met with.
Oh, that'd be great, because, you know, mainstream media has been saying that Florida is a petri dish for new COVID strains and how dangerous it all is. But meanwhile, people are going on with their lives and nothing's really happening there. I just talked to a friend who was in Florida for about 3 weeks visiting her daughter. And she said people are getting back to living their lives and a lot of people are just putting all of this insanity behind them in Florida.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
What happens if you don't exercise your muscles?
Right, they atrophy.
What happens if you don't exercise your brain?
The same thing, I'd say.
What happens if you don't exercise your immune system?
Right, that's a good point. That's exactly what they're doing by wearing a mask.
If you're not exposed to adversity, if or things that are harmful like that, then your body builds up no immunities to it. So then when something does come along, you have no immunities. That's nature. I mean, we are creatures of nature. You know, as much as man thinks he isn't, we're still dominated by the laws of the universe.
That's a good point. Absolutely. We're bound by the laws of creation. We're not apart from that at all, as much as they want us to believe that. Of course, if they remove God from the equation, then the government gets to take all that power, and that's what they're doing. And yeah, you know, wearing a mask, you're not getting exposed to pollen and just viruses and bacteria and mold that's in the air. And yeah, and then washing your hand 25 times a day, you know, you're not getting regular bacteria you're supposed to be exposed to. Yeah, so you're right. And not going outside and getting fresh air and sunlight. This is all designed to atrophy your immune system. Exactly.
And the more you're atrophied, the more you're relying upon something other than yourself. Correlation there.
Great correlation, guys. And guys, I have found this. Governor Ron DeSantis, he had a roundtable discussion, and they put it on YouTube. So he wanted to make his roundtable discussion public, which the people should have and should have access to. He had the panelist he had was, and I hope I pronounced these names correctly, Sunetra Gupta of Oxford, Martin Kulldorff of Harvard, and Scott Atlas of Stanford. Certainly not lightweights in the educational industry. But YouTube blocked it.
Wow.
Okay, it says that last week YouTube removed a recording of this routine policy discussion from its website. The company claimed that the panel members were trafficking in misinformation. The company said it removed the video, and I quote, because it included content that contradicts the consensus of local and global health authorities regarding the efficacy of masks to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Oh, my God. And science has never been about consensus ever. That's
exactly. And it says, yet the panelists were all experts and all spoke against requiring even children to wear masks. The scientific evidence is clear. A study from Iceland conducted early in the epidemic when masking was uncommon. The study used a representative sample to track the source of COVID infections. The authors used contact tracing methods paired with genetic sequencing analysis to establish precisely how the disease spread. The senior author of the study, Carrie Stephenson, later told reporters that, quote, even if children do get infected, they are less likely to transmit the disease to others than adults. We have not found a single instance of a child infecting their parents. Many studies in the scientific literature reach a similar conclusion. Even unmasked children pose less of a risk for disease than do adults. So,
wow.
So the governor of Florida tries to be responsible to the citizens of Florida. And he has a panel discussion where the people can listen to it and not just hear one side of a story. Guys, when they allegedly have a trial, why do they have two sides of the story? Why do they not
try to come to the truth?
Why do they not come into a trial and say, okay, only the prosecution is going to be able to testify in this trial? There will be no defense. What would the people call that?
Kangaroo court. Or the George Floyd trial.
Well, isn't this
or the Bundy trials?
Isn't this the exact same thing we're seeing now?
Yeah.
With the COVID, with the vaccine, with all of this stuff, we're seeing a one-sided presentation. What they're saying is, hey, dumbass America, we're going to tell you what you need to know. Don't worry. You don't need to know anything but what we tell you. And if somebody else tries to tell you something that might be contrary to what we're saying, we're going to shut that sucker up, buddy. You're fine.
Yeah, and you know they always say they're violating community guidelines. I believe that this community guidelines don't exist. And really, what it's going to come down to is any narrative that disputes the official government narrative is going to be deleted from these major platforms. But I think there's going to be a lot of blowback. I was just reading this morning that the numbers for mainstream media news are at all-time lows. A lot of primetime news shows have only 2 million viewers. I mean, there's guys doing YouTube channels in their basement that have more people than that.
Good.
Well, and the papers have been going out of business for, 20 years now? What did the Washington Post, which we used to refer to as Pravda on the Potomac, what did they sell for to Amazon? So far under what they had originally been bought for, it was incredible.
I think he still paid $500 million for it, though.
Well, yeah.
Amazon bought the Washington Post?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, the Washington Compost.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out why Amazon would want to own a newspaper. It's not quite in their job description. Wait a minute. Bezos is one of our bettors. Never mind.
Right. Don't question anything he does. I think it's just a matter of keeping these bogus platforms afloat. They're powerful propaganda machines. And I think, you know, these billionaires, the money they have is all funny money. And that's why they all become philanthropists, because the money's not really theirs. It's part of this cabal. And, they've got to keep these platforms alive, even though there's no way they're making money. And there's no way that paper was worth $500 million.
Well, Dave, you make a real good point. I'm right now I'm having a brain cramp. trying to remember one of the guys that J.P. Morgan, when he actually died, they found out his wealth was like 20% of what had been projected.
That's and right. And the majority of his money was in a trust to the Rothschild family.
Yeah. Yeah. Fits goes right back into your right back to where what you were just talking about, Dave. And when you said that, that's when I thought of J.P. Morgan. Oh, yeah, he's got all of these billions. And then he dies and they find out that, oh, it's in a trust fund to the bankers. Right. Wonder how that happened.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, it's the same game being played today, just like you're doing with all your research on the Constitution. The game hasn't changed. I don't believe that Elon Musk has the kind of money they say he does. Tesla, the car company, has always lost money. And there's no way Elon Musk is making money putting rockets into space. And the whole thing's absurd.
Well, but, you know, all you need is a good newspaper to say you got millions. People give you more.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, you know, on that community standards thing, my friend Cal here got busted last night for violating community standards for saying that one of the greatest things that was hurting America was the overall ignorance of Bubus Americanus. Can you believe what? That?
No. What
I got slapped by Facebook for that, comment.
Yeah. Yeah. Facebook? And being the administrator of the site Cal was on, I got the notice, too.
Wow.
That had violated community standards to say that one of the biggest problems in this country is the ignorance of Bubus Americanus.
That's really profound because they're saying, well, you can't. We're providing the information to the people, and we're telling you what you need to know, so you can't say that. Delete. Amazing.
Oh, they're deleting. Prove my point.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of those things you wear like a badge of honor, you know?
I did. I do. Thanks for making my point, guys.
And it also proves that these platforms aren't in existence to make money, or they wouldn't be kicking people off their platforms as rapidly as they are. These are propaganda platforms, and they're not there to make money like we're told.
Somebody else is giving them money.
Exactly.
Because somebody has to be paying them money to censor, or they're getting backdoor money through the government somehow.
Right. I mean, when you have a system where, you know, it goes back to the central banking, if you can just print up money and hand it out to whoever you want, then there's no limit as to what you can do with it.
Well, I've always thought from the very beginning, and I said, having once been in the bowels of this monster in the employ of a U.S. government intelligence agency, I can tell you that what NSA, CIA, DIA, and a lot of other corporations would have given for the platform of Facebook, where you can actually get people to go on Facebook and tell you everything about their lives, down to the minute detail. I mean, in the late 60s and early 70s, even up into the 80s, NSA would have gone absolutely nuts to have had this kind of access.
Well, people are creating dossiers on themselves for free.
Exactly. And what more do you need than now, whenever we have an alleged mass shooter, what's the first thing they start quoting? Well, look what he said on Facebook.
Right.
Unless, of course, it happens to be Trayvon Martin, who had pictures flashing gang signs and all the other stuff, and that didn't fit the paradigm, so Facebook immediately removed his account.
Well, I guess, Mike, the big question is, how much longer are people going to believe anything that these oligarchs say? I think they're hitting the wall right now in terms of credibility, at least amongst more and more people than they ever have.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Dave, I wonder daily, but I've reached a conclusion that there is no way, I can't see any circumstance to where enough people in this country wake up to make a difference. Because, you know, 3 to 4 million people, and that may be the extent of it, 3 to 4 million people who think like we do. And that is such, what is that, 1%?
Yeah, about, yeah.
That, you know, we can't even reach that 3% threshold that they claim, I don't think, because I don't think there's 10 million people in this country who actually would stand up against, well, we're not standing up against it now. So how much tyranny do you have to have before you had enough?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, how many people are going to be getting sick from these experimental vaccines? Well, time will tell.
Well, I think we're going to see someone, I forgot who it was, said in about 8 to 9 months, we're going to see an outbreak of mad cow disease like you won't believe.
Yeah. But it'll be an after effect of being exposed to the COVID virus, Mike.
No, what they're doing is they're setting us up. It's going to be a new strain.
Right.
It will be a new strain of COVID. And as I said on a program yesterday, where in the world has anybody ever heard in our history of having a dangerous flu epidemic in the heat of summer?
Yeah.
Only the government can create that. So we've got just a couple of minutes left. Cal, sum us up pretty as to your thoughts, please, sir.
My thoughts on Sentinel or just my thoughts overall?
On the whole thing we've talked about today.
How to explain to people that pretty much everything that people are taught through the public indoctrination systems called schools on the founding and history of the creation of this country are either half-truths or outright lies. And it's a tough thing to face. It's hard, but only the truth can set you free. And, you know, Mike, you've been, you know, with your source documents and your study and your ability to put these pieces together into a cognitive sense that, you know, people can see the true picture if they will just look, you know, but you can show them the picture. You can't make them see the picture, but my hat's off to you for all the work and effort and time. Just a small amount of time that I've done in my studies is minuscule compared to what you've done. So my hat's off to you and all the efforts and everything you've done. You truly are a national treasure.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Cal. Your check's in the mail.
Yeah. Better be a big one this time. Yeah. That $298 last time, man. I couldn't even get a big
well,
one.
Hey. Yeah. Goodness. Dave, sum us up, pretty buddy.
Well, I would have to sum it up to say the song remains the same. And really, it traces back to the perfidy of the central banking system and their agents that are essentially able to buy off political opposition and to form a government to cover their own asses. That's essentially what happened. And until people see what the game is, they're going to get tricked over and over and over again. But your research is really pointing out what the game is and how it's the same game being played as it was back then.
Well, thanks, Dave. There it is, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in with us this week to Dare to Think Out Loud. Everyone, have a wonderful weekend and a safe weekend, and wake up and dare to think. We'll be right back.
you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Zero X E 0513.
We talk about this sample.